Welcome back to the Thermodiet Podcast. I'm your host, Jayden Miller, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Tyler Woodward.
How are we doing today, Jayden?
I'm doing well. So this episode of the podcast is actually brought to you by the Thermodiet book by Christopher Walker, coming out around April 19th or on April 19th.
Yeah, I believe is it this week?
Yeah, and this is also the year 2022, in case you're listening to this in the future. So get the book. Yeah. It's out.
So this will probably be released in a couple of weeks after the book. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Very excited for that.
Awesome. So today we have some questions from the Thermodiet Facebook group. If you're not in there, highly recommend it. We're in there answering questions and giving people tips all the time. It's a great community. I'd argue that it's one of the best on Facebook. So let's get into it.
It's definitely an awesome group. All right. So the first question we have is from Bobby Ann Brewer. And she said that she noticed that she only does organic tomatoes, but she has a reaction with her RA, rheumatoid arthritis. Do you guys have any idea what she can do for that or what it's causing that? Because she really loves her tomatoes.
Yeah. So the first thing that kind of came to mind would be nightshades. So like, I'd also wonder if you have any kind of issues with like peppers and stuff like that. Typically, it's going to be the skin that is the issue. So if you don't have any issue with like, you know, ketchup or any kind of sauces like that, then it's mainly going to be like the tomato itself that is the issue. So usually you can either peel the skin off after you bake it, which is a super easy way to do that, or just like scoop out the insides, you know, if you're using it for the taste in like a sauce or something like that. You don't necessarily need the skin. Yeah, that's all that I can really think about.
Yeah, we were doing some quick research yesterday on this, and it looks like lycopene, which is the compound in the alkaloid compound where they're talking about nightshades, that is causing most of the issues. Mm-hmm. So as Jayden would say, it'll be interesting to see like other reactions with food. So like, you might not have an issue eating with it with a steak because it's more acidic, might balance it out or something, or orange juice or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then cooking it might also have some dampening effects as well.
Yeah, definitely. And like, I would also recommend like sauteing it at a high heat, like very quickly. If you're going to do that versus like boiling it doesn't really work in terms of like breaking down that actual like molecule in the skin and stuff. Mm-hmm. Boiling also tends to take out a lot of the nutrients too. So a lot of the nutrients just, get into the water instead of the actual food. So typically I don't really boil that many nutrient dense foods like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe just try, if anything, eating it in smaller quantities and trying to build back up. Also, I was going to bring this up, that the baby tomatoes, that's a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Typically, this is not always true, but they have smaller quantities of the defense chemicals, quote unquote. So you may be able to easier digest that.
Yeah, I would also say that, like, in general, this is for all fruit. Make sure that it is very ripe, because if you're eating unripe fruit, it tends to, like, if you think about it, like, the plant doesn't actually want to be eaten until it's ripened completely, because then it's just going to be detrimental to, like, the whole reproductive process of the plant. So that's one of the reasons that, like, fruits tend to change color whenever they're ripe. Is because like that's whenever they're ready to be eaten, and you know, the seeds are ready to be taken and put somewhere else. So definitely make sure that all of the fruit that you eat is very well ripened.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about that yesterday, and it looks like that in response to the sun, at least potatoes will grow green actually. They're producing chlorophyll to use the energy as light. It's kind of the opposite of fruit usually. I think they usually turn red. They get less green, or they get colorful. It's probably just basically them getting ready, potatoes getting ready to sprout, versus the fruit is getting ready to, you know, I guess, what's the opposite of sprout? Fall off, basically. Mm-hmm. So be ready to be eaten. So very ripe fruits can be very important, much more easily digested. Typically more sugar too, especially like bananas too. It'll be less starchy, more sugary, makes it easier to digest.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Question number two from Bobby was, how often are we allowed to have Coke / root beer made with some organic cane sugar?
As often as you want. I would say, like, you know, if you're watching your calories, then maybe substitute it with something that's a little bit more filling and a little bit more nutrient dense. But I usually, like, if I have them, I'll probably drink like one a day, you know, until I run out. And then I might not have them for a week or so. And then if I happen to pick them up again, I'll have, you know,
What? Yeah. Just listen to your body is really what it comes down to. If you're feeling stressed, I mean, there's probably a lot less calories in a bottle of Coke than there is in a little bit of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
But that brings up a good point that Coke is, and cane sugar, sugar in general, is not nutritious, right? Doesn't mean it's bad. Just means it's energetic. It's, it supplies your body with energy. You need to make sure your nutrition, eating the organ meats, the liver. I know, Bobby, you don't like liver, but getting in those copper, calcium, zinc, everything you need, vitamin A, Bs, vitamins, blah, 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 vitamin C. And then if that, all that's in check, you can consume as much sugar as you want. But the more sugar you consume, the more energy you consume, the more vitamins and minerals you're going to need.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I'm a huge fan of like honey and maple syrup, because they contain some minerals. I don't think sugar is bad in any way, but I just think it's a little bit better.
Yeah, definitely. And like they have a higher amount of fructose too, which is going to be beneficial. And on a side note with that, mentioning that she doesn't like liver, if you don't like liver, one of the things that you can try is slicing it up in little pieces and mixing it with your ground beef. That's one way to kind of help eliminate the taste and make it more palatable. I'd also recommend, you know, making sure that you use a lot of butter whenever you cook it.
Onions.
Yeah. Yeah, onions, garlic too.
And then there's, what is that company? Is it Kingdom Soil or something? They basically, it's this ground beef company that mixes organ meats with ground beef.
Oh, Force of Nature.
Force of Nature. That's my favorite company. I think it's a great idea. Yeah. It's basically a...
They actually got those in King Soopers now.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so they have Force of Nature at King Super, Natural Grocers, Sprouts, which King Supers is also like a Kroger company. So if you have Kroger around you, Force of Nature, you can order them online too. And then there's also like the Grassland Beef has like the liverwurst, which is also like, it's like almost like...
Like a sausage, right?
Yeah, like summer sausage that you can like put in your eggs and stuff like that. So that's another super easy way to get it.
Do they have that at King Supers?
No, you got to order that one online, okay. Yeah.
And the nice part about organ meats from my bodybuilding boys out there is they're crazy dense with protein.
Yeah.
Like typically meat, unless you're getting like 93% is like very fatty compared to the amount of protein, which is, I mean, tastes great, but not necessarily great for your macros. Organ meats are so high in protein compared to fat. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're getting a ton of other nutrients.
So many other nutrients. So if you were going to do one thing in your diet, spending the extra couple bucks and getting some liver and heart in your ground beef when you don't even notice the taste, probably going to be the best thing you can do for your health. One of the best things you can do for your health.
Absolutely. Yeah. So also they got like liver bites too. Epic has like those dried liver bites.
Interesting.
I'm not really sure how they dry it. So I'm not really sure like how good the actual like process is for the nutrients inside of the liver. But that is another option too. I'm not a huge fan of liver capsules. They can get the job done in some cases. And, you know, they can be beneficial if that's your only source of liver. But, you know, always go for the food first.
Yeah, I think... If you're going to go with the liver capsules, the freeze-dried, so shout out Kitty Bloomfields and Saturé is her company. They make some freeze-dried liver capsules. That's where I would go. Hopefully we'll get some ourselves soon.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the desiccated, I'm not going to name the other companies, but the desiccated liver and organ meats are as good. Personally, I could be wrong. There's just not a lot of data out there on it.
Yeah.
So the food's going to be the best. Next question. I love the mindset episode you guys did. Any updates on your mindset principles, a routine and lifestyle used to optimize your mindset?
Yeah, I saw this one whenever it came in yesterday and I started thinking. I would say that my mindset game hasn't necessarily been like as on point as it was whenever a lot of those episodes came out. Like, you know, I've been going through a lot of change recently with like moving and moving in with the girlfriend and stuff like that. So, and then also, you know, filling my time with jujitsu and training and stuff like that. It's kind of taken a little bit of a back burner. I would say one of the things that has been top of mind recently would be just it's kind of like the law of attraction principle, not necessarily like if I believe in something enough, it'll happen, because I think that's, you know, mostly a load of bull. Like, you know, you can believe in something as much as you want, but you have to work for it to actually get it.
Materialize it.
Yeah. You have to put the energy into it in order to get something out of it. And so for me, it's more like from a mental perspective, like the more positive thoughts that you have, the more positive thoughts that you're going to attract, and you're going to create a kind of like a forward momentum towards positive thoughts, versus if you're only focusing on the negative, that's the only thing that you're going to think of. And so you're just going to keep attracting more of those thoughts and seeing things in a negative perspective. So just taking the time to really analyze like what you're looking at from a negative perspective, and then seeing what kinds of positive things that you can start replacing a lot of those thoughts with goes a long ways. Like, you still need to be a realist whenever it comes down to it, but you can also still be pretty positive and optimistic too.
For sure. Yeah, Jaden is definitely the mindset guru. I mostly kind of just like, I don't know, roll with the punches. I try not to think about it too much. Right now, I'm really kind of trying to work on myself just the regard of reading a lot. Try to read every night a little bit, educating myself in that way. I really want to get that N1 education thing. But also the big thing for me recently is, and I just moved to Colorado, still getting settled in and meeting people. But just surrounding yourself with people that you enjoy being around. Mm-hmm. I was having a lot less fun working at home by myself than I am in the office with Zach and Jaden. And I'm bettering myself because I get to have conversations with them all the time about thermodynamics. Like, we just go back and forth, have conversations like you see right now. And we're just both learning, talking about things we are reading about and sharing our perspective, which is just easiest way to better yourself by far.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, you know, something else that has helped me in the past is like, if you want to get to know yourself better, you need to write. If you want to kind of like make yourself grow, then you need to read. Like, those are probably two of the most important self-growth things that you can do, is like, write down stuff, and then over time figure out the patterns that you want to eliminate and figure out how you can kind of disrupt those patterns, and then learn as much as you can. Like, you will never be able to learn enough, no matter where you are in your life, no matter how old you are. There's always information out there that is worth knowing in some form or fashion. So hit the ground running and learn as much as you can through podcasts like this one, through books, through YouTube videos, through Netflix documentaries, through talking to new people. However you can get information in, do it, because it's worth it no matter what.
Yeah, that's definitely been something I've been trying to change as well. It's like, I've just, you know, it's impossible to know it all. It's impossible to not be wrong. And honestly, the more you're wrong, the more you're going to learn, the more you're going to be right, pretty much. So that's why I started phrasing and talking about writing. I really like those Instagram posts. I really love the written word. I've kind of fallen in love with it. Never imagined myself being a writer, but I've had some fun with it recently. And just like getting yourself out there, like putting your thoughts pen to paper and just, you know, reading, hearing other people's thoughts. You don't necessarily like, I'm reading The Salt Fix by James Nicotolan. I can never pronounce his name. I don't know why I can't pronounce his name. I need to read his name. And I mean, I completely disagree with his take on sugar, but it's interesting hearing why he demonizes sugar. I think he's wrong a lot of the times, but you know, like you got to ask yourself these questions. Like, how would you have a conversation with him? Mm-hmm. And like, what would you say he's wrong about? And then he's going to point holes in your argument, and then you're going to grow because of that.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you know, everybody has a piece of the picture. I don't think anybody has the complete full picture figured out. And if those people do have it figured out, it's like you could count them on one hand very easily. And something else that has been beneficial to me has been picking up new hobbies. One, so like with jiu-jitsu, like always learning something new, no matter what it is, like always watching a YouTube video, you know, checking out new tutorials that might be coming out that I could do, following people on Instagram that give out really good advice, talking to people at the gym, getting tips from them, especially the upper belts. Other than that, I would say, along with the new hobbies, try to create novelty in your day-to-day experience. So like, whether it's taking like a new route to work in the mornings, whether you're driving or walking, like, you know, if you're walking, go one block down and go around instead of taking a straight line to work, you know, something like that. Or talking to someone new, like try to figure out how to create subtle novelty in your day-to-day experience. And that will also help.
Yeah. I mean, that's an awesome point. Trying to find like things that maybe monotonous and trying to make them enjoyable, trying to find things that you do enjoy about things that you might not love. Mm-hmm. Finding the bright side, basically. I forget that saying, is that the silver lining? Is that what it is? Or is that Might be different. But I also want to say kind of one contrary point, and it might sound like Jayden and I mean, we kind of love what we do, and we get to research and read a lot, and as part of our livelihood, like, you guys might not be doing what we do, writing about thermodiet on a daily basis or making these Instagram posts and reading all day. But also, so it's important to have a balance of just doing things that you love. So like some days, sometimes I'm on the podcast grind and I'm listening to podcast after podcast and I get through them. And sometimes I'm like, dude, I just need to listen to some music and enjoy it. So it's not always about being on the grind. I try to set myself up so the grind is as easy as possible. And I'm always trying to read like for 30 minutes a night. And then once you sit down, open the book, I mean, I enjoy it personally. I love reading. I know you love reading. But I think it takes, and one thing I've always said for guitar, and it's taken me a while to get into, it's like, I want to get to the point where I can just sit down and play guitar and I enjoy it. But that doesn't mean it's not stressful too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not necessarily, things that are hard aren't necessarily the most relaxing thing, like sitting and watching a movie.
Right, that stress is necessary for the growth to happen though. 100%. Like, stress is necessary, whether it's physiological stress, like Hugh stress, like we talked about, or if it's psychological stress, like you're trying to figure out a math problem or figure out how to play guitar or figure out how to tighten up a submission so you get it next time. Like, you know, all that stress response is definitely necessary for growth to happen.
Yeah. So in the words of Ray Pete, do the best with what you have in front of you. I think that goes with the diet, nutrition, life, just try and do the best with what you got.
Yeah, definitely. And like, some other super simple tips is like, get as much sunshine as you can. Like, light exposure is extremely beneficial for
everything.
Yeah. Your mind, your body, all of it. So definitely get some sunshine. You know, figure out how to create balance in your life. So, you know, if you have a sedentary job, how can you be more active outside of that? Like, can you take more walks? Can you work out before work or after work? Like, definitely try to figure out the yin to your yang in your day-to-day experience as well. I'd say that's probably something that has allowed me to stay relatively balanced, I guess.
And trying to do more with less is also, I think, a good point that you do a very good job of. Like, you might not be doing, I don't know, 10 hours of work a day. You might get less done than having 6 quality hours, you know? Mm-hmm. So finding that balance, as you said.
Yeah, something that Georgie told me one time whenever I was having a conversation with him is that, you know, you can set, like, this guy, he's always on podcasts. He has his own business. He works for somebody. Like, he has a full-time job and he has a family. And so basically what he told me is, like, you know, you have your set 8 hours of work that you can do in a day. Do as much as you possibly can during those 8 hours and then you're done. Like, you can't ask anything more of yourself because you've given those 8 hours everything that you've had. Everything outside of that, it doesn't matter. I mean, you've given it everything that you've got. So you don't have to worry about it, so to speak, and you can move on to the next thing.
And that's also just having that day-by-day difference, like where you just leave work, go get food, go relax for a little bit, and then do it all over again. Mm-hmm. Have the weekend, do whatever you want to do then.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Next question. Thermo skincare routine for normal or acne-prone skin. What oils/creams do you use for your face? Any thermo hair products can poof? And then next question, I'll address that after.
So I like using just some organic cocoa butter. I find that works to keep my skin from drying out a lot better than coconut oil does. My hands are pretty dry right now because I haven't really been using it, but that's typically what I do use, is just some good cocoa butter. It's like rock solid at room temperature too, so it's like a really good saturated fat to put in there.
I think it has a lot of vitamin E too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The vitamin E content's really good. I know a lot of people also use like tallow products. So like Cosmo Beauty, she has a bunch of tallow products.
Shout out Cosmo Beauty. And Saturay Official is coming out. Kitty's brand soon is releasing new stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So if you're in Australia or want to order overseas, Kitty's definitely the one to go to. Cosmo Beauty is
right out of Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado local baby. So definitely support her if you're into that kind of stuff. We also have a blog post over like personal care and products like that. So make sure to check out the blog post on the Umzu website for that. And I think I also posted it as an announcement inside of the Thermo Diet group. So if you're in the Thermo group, make sure to check that out. And then, you know, other than that, I don't really use too much Like, that's really the only thing that I put on my skin.
I put some vitamin S on, you know, sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
I don't do anything for my skin. I used to have really bad acne, and I would put a ton of stuff on. I don't think it ever helped, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I had, we had a skin brand, I would probably use it sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't really have very dry skin. My knees get a little ashy, but I guess I should buy some cocoa butter. But anything saturated fat, so coconut butter is going to be fine. Apparently, cocoa butter is the go-to. Ghee, even butter probably. Mm-hmm. Tallow are going to have those fat-soluble vitamins and cholesterol. Your skin uses those cholesterol and fat-soluble vitamins to make testosterone, progesterone, vitamin D. So getting adequate amounts of those fat-soluble vitamins and retinol, liver, and copper, which is in liver and chocolate, cacao, all going to be great for skin health. Getting enough sunshine, especially in the summer, is going to be phenomenal as well.
Yeah, I would say 80% of it is probably going to be dietary and like a lot of the physiological stuff that we talk about. And then the other 20%, you know, you can cover with some of the things that we just mentioned. We're also probably not the most helpful people on this particular subject because we're just a couple of young guys who don't necessarily have a bunch of skin issues. So, or at least right now anyways. Just have good hygiene and, you know, moisturize with some natural products and you'll be good to go.
Yeah. And if anyone, I would love to get Cosmo Beauty on our podcast. I forget what her actual name is, but she's really cool. I've talked to her a couple times. I did reach out to her, but if anyone knows her, wants to get her on the podcast, I'd love to talk to her. She's like an expert on skin health. So it'd be awesome to have her. She's right here in Colorado. So we can have her here in person too.
Yeah. That'd be great.
So the second question was, can PUFA withdrawal increase appearance of acne?
So we talked a little bit about this one earlier. One of the things that we were talking about is like it could be a detoxification pathway for your body. So your body could be pushing the PUFAs out through the skin, and that's resulting in a lot of like the acne that's coming up, you know, probably everywhere, I would assume. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're sweating a lot, like if you're working out and you're sweating a lot, or if you just sweat a lot in general, it's probably going to lead to a little bit more because your body's pushing all of those out. I would say that the carrot salad is definitely going to help. So making sure that you're getting a lot of the estrogen and other crap out of the digestive system is going to help with that. Also making sure that you're not deficient in vitamin A is going to be huge. Zinc, copper are both huge. B5 is another big one that people are typically a little bit deficient in whenever it comes to acne. Pretty much all of the B vitamins are going to be important.
Yeah, I know B1, B2, I don't think B3, but B1 and B2 are necessary. So estrogen and PUFAs kind of go, synergistically, but bad synergistically together. Mm-hmm. So B1, B2 are necessary to detoxify estrogen. I need to re-listen to the podcast with Ray. Because he had two gems. I can't remember what the other one is regarding the B vitamins. But getting adequate of the B vitamins is very important. And then I just want to clarify that like sweating isn't bad. But mm-hmm. when you're in a state of like you were eating PUFAs and you're now not eating PUFAs, that can cause them. It's basically a good thing. The acne is like your body getting out of those toxins some mm-hmm. way or another. So going to a sauna may make the acne worse. But it may also probably will accelerate how long it lasts for. So, and just as Jane said, good nutrition, electrolytes, all that fun stuff, milk.
Yeah, definitely. It'll subside over time for sure. You know, you just got to give it that time to get out of that. Cause I mean, sweat and it is a detoxification pathway. And, you know, just like things can come into your skin from the outside world, your body can also push them out for that sure. way too.
Vitamin E might help as well.
Yeah, vitamin E definitely for sure.
Andrew Giselle asks, lacking sleep due to lifestyle. I go dancing 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. Compensatory protocol.
So first, I would recommend listening to our episode on how to mitigate the effects of alcohol or the side effects of alcohol, so to speak. And then I would say wake up as late as you can the next day, like sleep as much as you can. And then make sure that you get in adequate nutrition the next day. And make sure that your nutrition before going out is also on point too. But definitely the next day, like the recovery, I would say is probably the most important part.
I might contradict you a little bit there and say that if you can set your schedule around that, I mean, it's probably, if you can sleep till 9 a.m. every day, then you're probably better off just having a consistent sleep schedule than just sleeping in really late the one day. But if you can't do that and you have like a normal 9 to 5, like majority of us do, then go with what Jayden said, just get the extra sleep the next day.
Yeah, you might also take a nap before you go out too. I would say that would help as far as like the sleep deprivation effects, maybe getting like a 1 to 2 hour nap before you go out. Probably make you feel better going out. And then second, it would help you kind of start to help to counteract the effects of the sleep deprivation that you're getting. I don't necessarily think that it's, you know, a good substitute for good, solid, quality, scheduled sleep, but that can definitely play a factor.
Yeah, we should definitely do a sleep podcast.
Yeah, we should do a sleep podcast. I think we did one a long time ago, but there's some different ideas that I have that we can talk about for sure.
Andrew Giselle also asked, dental health for high sugar diet, facing enamel erosion decay, what can be done?
Yeah, so make sure that you are not deficient in D, K, E, and A. Like the fat-soluble vitamins are going to be very important, and magnesium for bone health. Your teeth are kind of bones. They're like mini organs that you need to make sure to provide sufficient nutrients to. So the diet's going to be huge, making sure that you're getting in enough calcium. And then I would say in general, don't let stuff like sit on your teeth. So like if you have like, if you're eating potatoes and you get some like in your teeth, try and clean your teeth off and not let it sit on the teeth. Or if you drink stuff that is very acidic, maybe rinse your mouth out, after you do that.
With some baking soda or something basic.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that'll help keep that stuff from actually eating away at the teeth. Oil pulling is another great like oral hygiene tip. There's also this like, it's like a stick that is technically like a natural toothbrush called, Miswak, MISWACK, I want to say. And you can chew on that and it's supposed to be good for dental health. I'm not really sure if there's like any kind of estrogenic effects to it. So I would definitely, look into that before using it, but that's something that I've seen around that people use that could be beneficial there.
Yeah. I think basically the whole point of flossing and brushing your teeth is to get food particles off of your teeth, not necessarily to clean them, but just like kind of maintain, like not having stuff just sitting there, like like stain on your carpet kind of thing. I think teeth are pretty weird. They seems to be very, a lot of conflicting stuff on it, but getting enough calcium is going to help remineralize your teeth. Getting enough K2, because that's going to put the calcium where it belongs, in the teeth, not in your arteries. Very important. K2 supplement, highly important, especially because we're all pretty much deficient in it generally, because it's hard to get unless you're eating grass-fed organ meats and like Parmesan Reggiano cheese and slamming that, which is hard to slam because it tastes really strong. not mouth breathing. Nasal breathing is basically helps to not have bacteria build up in your teeth, probably associated with cavities.
One thing that Georgie actually mentioned, I think I asked him this one time, making sure that your teeth remain wet. Like if you fall asleep with and get dry mouth at night and stuff like that, like your teeth actually need to stay wet. It's not good for them to be dry. So making sure that your mouth is consistently moisturized is also going to be another important factor there as well.
That's pretty interesting because I think saliva is relatively, is it basic or acidic? Do you know? Mm-hmm. Saliva, I think it's relatively basic.
I don't think it could be too acidic because of the enzymes that are released in the saliva.
But the intestine's relatively acidic too.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I don't know how acidic amylase can be before it's inactive.
That's true. So I believe saliva is either acidic or basic. Basically, it's just a protective mechanism that helps to defend against bacteria. So not mouth breathing, having some saliva production, maybe even chewing gum. You can get a high quality, like not with real sugar or some that lasts long, would probably be a good substitute. I think it's xylogum or something.
Xylitol.
That's a bad ingredient, isn't it?
I think as long as you're not swallowing it, it's not going to be terrible. There are some good alternatives. I don't think that we've put that in the blog post though, so that might be something that we could take note of and make a blog post.
Pure gum, I think, is pretty good though, right?
I don't know.
I think I was looking back. This could have been a couple years ago, so I could be completely wrong. But I think PUR gum might be okay. You can hit us up. We'll answer it.
Yeah.
You could look into a hydroxyapatite toothpaste. So I've been using it. It's called Boca is the brand. It's a couple, I think Risewell is another brand that uses it. So hydroxyapatite is a natural protein that your teeth produce, and I think your bones as well, that is responsible for remineralizing, so getting that calcium and phosphorus into your teeth. And then that's a very important ratio on the calcium to phosphorus ratio. Ray P talks about this a lot. If you're consuming meats, you need to be consuming calcium. And probably, is it 1-to-1?
Say that again.
The ratio for calcium to phosphorus?
I'm not sure if it's a 1-to-1 ratio. I just know that he's like, get in as much calcium as
you can. Get in as much calcium as you can. So slam some milk. If you can't get too much fat, do whole milk. Or too much fat for your whole milk, just 2%, 1%, even skim milk is going to help.
Yeah, non-fat powdered milk is also another hack that some of the bioenergetic people use.
Okay, or eggshell calcium is pretty good too. Mm-hmm. Just can be a little bit of pain.
Yeah, and another oral hygiene tip is like getting your gut health right is going to be huge. Mm. Oil pulling is another one that can help kind of like it's got the antibacterial effects to kind of pull a lot of the bacteria out of the mouth. Also, if you get white tongue, that could be a candida issue. So candida might be something that you need to address with like flowers of sulfur and a carrot salad or something like that. All of those should be looked at as well.
Okay, so here's a tough one. There have been guests in the podcast previously who recommend against certain supplements that Umzu offers, such as vitamin C, as ascorbic acid, and zinc. Could you explain the cause of the concern of these two examples and why Umzu chooses to include their ingredients in these supplements? So, I mean, this is a tough one. Basically, the argument is that vitamin C, ascorbic acid, is synthetic vitamin C, and it doesn't contain the tyrosinase enzyme, which whole food vitamin C, which you get in like fruits, citrus, that has copper in it. So ascorbic acid may deplete copper. Zinc, the other argument against zinc is that zinc and copper and a lot of these minerals are on a relationship like a seesaw. So if you get too much zinc, it can deplete your copper. If you get too much copper, it can deplete your zinc. So this is why Umzu is, and Chris has talked about this recently, if you haven't heard, we're moving towards like a hair tissue mineral analysis. So basically, instead of offering these generalized solutions, the thought process behind Redwood and TestRx is that we're going to supply the population with what they are generally most efficient in. And
for that specific like support.
Yeah. So for like blood flow, for testosterone. And I mean, they could be right, and there's a good chance they are right in some aspect. But I mean, the amount of people that have had positive experiences with Redwood, with TestRx, I think speaks for itself. But also the amount of data out there has found the benefits of zinc for increasing testosterone, the benefits of vitamin C. There's probably a million studies on the medicinal uses of ascorbic acid. So, and just because something is medicinally beneficial doesn't mean it can also have some side effects and whatnot. I think whole foods are generally the safest option. But if someone isn't going to get those, I think TestRx and Redwood can also be a great option. Are they perfect? Absolutely not. We're going to keep trying to make them better and better as we progress as a company. And so you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, they're probably not perfect supplements, but they are probably the best on the market, in my opinion.
So. That's for sure. And that's why, again, with that hair tissue mineral analysis, we can stop making these generalized, we can go from these generalized solution that we believe will be best for the majority of people based on what people are generally deficient in regards to those health issues, to saying, oh, you know what, you're deficient in copper, you have too much zinc, or vice versa, we give you that, you give you magnesium. Then it's a personalized solution that's not a one-size-fits-all, mm-hmm. which is always going to be better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So hopefully that helps to clarify it up. But generally, we think that the benefits outweigh the cons.
Yeah. And, like, we're also always researching stuff. And, like, anytime that we find something that we have that is not beneficial or has effects that we don't necessarily think are beneficial, then we'll remove it from our products and we'll replace it with something else or just make the product have one less ingredient. So we're always looking for new ideas and stuff like that. And if something really is detrimental and we come across it and we haven't found good research to support otherwise, then it's going to get taken out of our supplements.
We're bound to be wrong. It's just good to not be dogmatic. Mm-hmm. And I love the example of phosphatidylserine, which is the main ingredient in Cortigone. Phosphatidylserine has a ton of benefits. It's been shown to be extremely potent. Jayton loves it. You could probably go on and on talking about it. But we naturally produce phosphatidylserine, and it's much more saturated as a fat when we naturally produce it or in bovine brain. The issue is in the U.S., you cannot get, and I don't know if anywhere in the country or the world, you can get phosphatidylserine from bovine brain because it's legal. So phosphatidylserine from soy lecithin, very beneficial. Phosphatidylserine from bovine brain could be more beneficial, in my opinion, in the future. If we have the option to do that, I think it would be very beneficial. But right now, there's no way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Even though it is a soy-derived phosphatidylserine, though, it is extracted without a lot of the anti-nutrients that are also found in soy, like the estrogenics. It is a completely isolated form. So we took our due diligence to work through the manufacturing process to make sure that it was like that before we actually started doing it, because we're not soy boys.
Yeah, 100%. I don't have an issue with the phosphatidylserine. I just think that the if we could either eat cow brain or get the yet in a supplement, I think it could be better, which would be cool. It'd be cool to see if people think it's better.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. We just got to get rid of that mad cow disease.
Yeah. What are some of the most common, easily correctable micronutrient deficiencies, and how long does it take to correct them?
I think, vitamin K is definitely one that's very hard to get in the diet and is, pretty easy to and pretty quickly restored whenever you start supplementing with a good amount of vitamin K. I like multiple forms of vitamin K in one supplement, so I kind of like a mixed vitamin K supplement versus like an isolated vitamin K supplement.
I like the K a lot. Our K supplement is awesome.
Yeah, our vitamin K is money. Yeah, I really like our vitamin K. It has K1, it has K2. I think it has MK4 and MK7 in it. So the vitamin K is definitely one that I'd recommend. I would say in general, people don't get enough magnesium. Like
100%.
Even if you're supplementing with magnesium, you're probably not getting enough magnesium. Any way that you can get magnesium in, you probably should be trying to get it in. Whether it's through Epsom salt baths, magnesium bicarbonate, supplementation through capsules with like gluconate or like the chelated version or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Magnesium is 100%. People are not getting enough magnesium.
Yep.
Let's see. Vitamin E is another one that's kind of hard to get in foods that people typically don't have enough of, especially whenever they're exposed to so many PUFAs. Your vitamin E stores get used up very easily, especially if you're in a very inflamed state. So making sure that you get enough vitamin E is going to be another one.
Yeah, and the best sources of vitamin E are like seed oils, which have a ton of PUFAs. So they also increase your vitamin E requirements. So it's so vitamin E, in my opinion, is something you kind of have to supplement with.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. And in the manufacturing process, they isolate vitamin E from the PUFA in a lot of cases. So if you're getting I think one that is used pretty commonly is the wheat germ vitamin E. So something like that, as long as it's a fully isolated form of vitamin E, it's going to be pretty good. I personally use Unique E. It's like a mixed tocopherol blend. I know that Mitolife has a good vitamin E supplement, and then we're going to be coming out with our own vitamin E supplement that's going to be
which awesome is actually from a non-polyunsaturated fat source. I forget what it is, but it's going to be dope.
Oh, sick.
So yeah. We'll see.
That's dope.
And then anything else you would say?
Let's see.
I would throw retinol in.
Yeah, vitamin A for sure.
Copper.
Copper, probably. And unless you're like me and you're downing, a giant thing of orange juice a day.
Yeah. But that's true. But, retinol, I think you can get in small quantities in butter and milk and some probably aren't. And you can get in synthetic, the retinol palmitate, which I don't think is as good, but it's probably better than nothing for sure. But when you consider, I think, liver is just so, 3 ounces of liver is 1,000% of your RDA.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep thinking about it. I really started feeling good when I started eating liver.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first couple times I was eating it, my body just started heating up.
Mm-hmm.
It was I remember you guys talking about it in the beginning Thermo Diet podcast, when you start eating a really thermo meal and your body just starts feel almost sweating.
Yeah, you start sweating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like a unique feeling, but mm-hmm. it feels good. You start to feel wow, this is what it should feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the day, we used to call those fat boy sweats, but that was just from eating way too much in one sitting.
That's funny. Those, I would say, how long it takes to get them, it really depends how much you're eating them, how it's going to depend on a number of things.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Really hard answer that. But just doing what you can to get those in your diet will make them be deficient in them less time.
Mm-hmm. I would also say like a good vitamin C source is something that people are probably deficient in too. Like, you know, getting in, I drink a lot of orange juice.
Jaden drinks so much orange juice.
But it's for good reason. Like the whole food vitamin C is very important. Like there's good copper in there.
Yes, sir.
So highly recommend getting in a good amount of vitamin C from your food.
Smoothies are great too. Glycine.
Calcium. Calcium is another
one. Salt.
Potassium. Like all of these things, like if you're not really focused on getting them, you're probably going to be deficient in them.
Yeah. Trying to set your diet up as a high carb diet and not from primarily sugar. I mean, sugar's not bad. We talked about that before, but like fruits, bananas, and some collagen. I think people could be glycine deficient technically. I would even argue people can be sugar deficient.
Mm-hmm.
Relative to fats, I don't really think high fat diets are great in any way. I was personally doing one. I made that mistake. I was way too high. I mean, it wasn't very high in fat, but it was much higher in fat than I would have liked. So I think I'm going to switch to that 1% milk, get that chocolate milk in back in and do some more smoothies. Just do a higher carb relative fat. And I shifted to a relatively more lower fat ground beef, but doing that Force of Nature stuff too. I don't know if that was the last podcast we talked about it. Was that this podcast?
No, yeah, it was earlier in this one.
That's going to be more protein relative to fat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be better as well.
Yeah, honestly, like most of these other than like calcium can be eliminated simply through eating like oysters once a week, liver a couple times a week, getting in eggs a couple times a day. Like if you can do that, then you have a lot of these covered.
Except magnesium
and vitamin A. Well, vitamin A. You know, you definitely have vitamin A covered there.
So eat
calcium.
Sorry, organ meats once a week. Drink at least a cup of milk, probably 2 cups of milk a day.
And get cheese in too.
And cheese.
Yeah.
Or maybe a cup of milk and some cheese. A generous serving or a smoothie of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Scoop of collagen. Or a weekly bone, like bone broth or like oxtail meal will be as well.
Are we laying out like the ideal daily diet?
I'm saying like in a week maybe.
Okay.
I'm trying to give like general guidelines. And then probably a vitamin E supplement and then maybe vitamin K or some Parmesan Reggiano, hard cheese,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that.
Yep. Outside of that, you know, if you're working out pretty consistently and you sweat a lot, the electrolytes are probably going to be, it's going to be hard to get enough. So get as much of those as you can. Salt your food to taste, maybe even supplement with a little bit of extra salt if you really need to, if you're having a large adrenal response. Anything else you got to add? Nope, that's all I got.
And we covered it. All right, so what books does anyone recommend? Philosophy, diet, lifestyle, shameless plug. Definitely shout out Thermo Diet.
Yeah, the Thermo Diet for sure. Chris did a great job on that book. Honestly, like anything that Chris has written is pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's see. Right now I'm reading a book called Anti-Fragile, like things that benefit from disorder and chaos.
Who wrote that?
Naleen Tlaib, okay. Or something like that. I can't remember his exact name. His name has, for some reason, slips me. He's one of the only authors that I'm like, I don't remember.
I can't remember Saul Fix.
Who wrote that book? But,
James.
No, that one's been good so far. I'm probably like 50 pages in it. I didn't start it too long ago, and it has been good so far. He's kind of just explaining like the concept of anti-fragility.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I read The Body Keeps the Score not too long ago, and that is probably definitely up there with one of the best books that I've read. I really like The Kabbalion.
I got to read that.
You definitely need to read that. It's really good. Obviously, Kate Deering's book is another foundational one for thermo.
In terms of pro-metabolic books, I really want to read Repeat Stuff, but I think Kate's book is like probably number one, even maybe before Thermo Diet. Thermo Diet and Kate's book are probably going to be hand-in-hand.
Mm-hmm. Those are definitely if you're getting into like the bioenergetic or pro-metabolic approach, those are the first two books that you should read probably.
And then I would go Estrogen Generation and Biology of Belief are going to be two very important.
Yeah, Biology of Belief is pretty good. I like Bruce Lipton's.
And I really liked Weston A. Price's book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. it basically talks about like the ancestral living, and that's what like Liver King and all that, a lot of that's based off of. He basically found K2. He called it Activator X before Chris Masterjohn realized that it was K2. Basically, I mean, it just shows like, and you got to take a lot of stuff with grain of salt. He's pretty anti-sugar or not. And like, he likes whole wheat and grains compared to other stuff, but you get to understand that like we're in a very far off way of eating than we used to be ancestrally. And so like right now, Thermodi is kind of chasing that optimal. And the question is, how optimal do you need to be able to regain good health? But a lot of times, like, really just focusing on getting good, nutritious food is the big emphasis from that book. Not necessarily something everyone needs to read. It's a little bit of a long read, but it was really perspective broadening for me mm-hmm. in terms of like, what is the good enough diet, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Whenever it comes to books, I would say like my general recommendation is if it's recommended at least 3 times, you should read it. And then, you know, if it's something that you haven't heard of, definitely like listen to a summary of it or like some reviews on it or something, so you don't waste your time reading that book, because like we only have a finite amount of time that we're able to read. So like only reading good stuff is a priority.
Yeah. I also like reading blogs and listening to podcasts by the same guy. Like I like Patrick McCown's book, Oxygen Advantage, is pretty good. Breathe by James Nestor is pretty decent. I just read that. And there's a lot of books that like I agree with a lot of it. Like I read The Magnesium Miracle. It was a good book, but I don't agree with all of it. So it's like hard to recommend someone where it's like you got to take half the book with a grain of salt or like a good amount of the book. Same thing with The Salt Fix. Like he has a lot of good information on salt. A lot of information I don't love on sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like telling someone to read that and then it's like, yeah, but you can only listen to half of what he says is hard. So find books that you're interested in.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like for me, like I love the super scientific physiological stuff, but I'm also super philosophical and psychological stuff. Like whenever I read, like I really like to kind of spend time in that cerebral space up there.
Yeah. And I've been trying to do like a little bit of a freelance reading, like not necessarily for work. Haven't been doing a great job of that. But sometimes if I finish a book on the weekend, I'll just like dig into the other book I'm reading instead of just starting a new one. I also really want to read Broda Barnes' book. It's next on my list.
Oh, yeah. The Unsuspected Illness?
Yeah, Hypothyroidism.
Yeah. I got that one if you want to.
I think I have it as well.
Okay.
But, and then I want to read Ray Peet's books for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Are Umzu bars ever going to be back in stock? Yes. I don't have a date for you off the top of my head, but hopefully by the time this podcast airs, they will be back in stock. I think it's in the next like 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah. Those supply chain issues are really biting us right now.
Yeah. So we apologize about that. Craig Barrow asked, why do I wake up most nights around 3 a.m.? It's 4 a.m. as I'm typing this.
So it sounds like that you're probably running out of glycogen stores at night. And so that dip in blood sugar is probably what's causing you to wake up. So I would definitely eat something before you go to sleep. Like we mentioned, something that's super easy to digest, relatively quick digesting, high in carbohydrates, maybe a little bit of fats to slow the digestion a little bit, maybe a little bit of protein. And then another hack that people typically do is like keep like some milk with honey in it right next to your bed. So whenever you wake up, you can slam that, reestablish your blood sugar levels, and then sleep the rest of the night.
Yeah, just get some sugar in when you wake up and before you go to bed. Hopefully it will help you not wake up, and maybe some salt as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And if you have to pee as well, it's the same thing. Getting enough salt is very important suppress the antidiuretic hormone or increase I forget which it is.
Yeah, also experimenting with a little bit of ashwagandha before bed too. Ashwagandha and
magnesium.
At one point, me and Zach, I was homeless for a couple weeks whenever I was living in Boulder. I was switching places and I stayed with him for a little while. And we were doing like, we did, it was like aspirin, ashwagandha, and niacinamide. We were doing that before bed. And it gives you crazy dreams. So if you want to be entertained whenever you go to sleep as well, then that's something else that you might look into.
I've heard about that for niacinamide, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe ashwagandha too, I think, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. So yeah, I think hopefully that helps. So Kevin Taylor listened to Art of Manliness podcast, The New Science of Metabolism. We haven't listened to it, but he asked, does the metabolism self-regulate? Does exercise regulate appetite? Should we avoid processed foods?
You want to hit the self-regulating part of that?
I think the metabolism, I mean, if the metabolism didn't self-regulate, we'd probably all be dead. Mm. You have cravings for a reason. You crave salt, you crave sugar, you get hungry, you want meat. If your body wasn't telling you that, we would probably not be here having this conversation, doing this podcast right now.
Yeah. Given that, like, we do have the ability to manipulate it in certain ways, which is, like, basically what this entire podcast is about, is how to manipulate your metabolic mm-hmm. rate to make it as favorable as possible for your health. So it definitely is – it can be influenced, but
– it's very important to understand that we've been led very far astray. The salt fix was talking about it yesterday. I was reading about it, that if food tastes really salty to you, even though it shouldn't be, that's your body's sign, your body telling you that you need more salt, because it's like, this is good, basically. But we've been trained, we've been told to believe that salt is bad. So then you make that association. So you're like rewiring your brain in a confusing way.
I thought it was the opposite of that. Like, if something doesn't taste salty to you, but it has a lot of salt in it, then that's whenever you're like, I need more salt.
No, I think he was making the argument that if it has salt in it, it's not, if it tastes very salty, it's like your brain is learning to sense salt better because it needs it more.
Mm, okay, interesting.
I think the opposite could also be true, though. Mm-hmm. But like, your body just has a huge ability to push salt out a lot harder for it to retain salt. It takes a lot more work.
So. Yeah. There's a similar idea with sugar. Like, if something's like super duper sweet and like you really crave it, then mm-hmm. that's your body telling you that you need it for some reason versus like, you know. And
that's also a good point. Like, there are a lot of sugary foods like ice cream, chocolate, fruit, very good.
Chocolate is a huge one. Especially like I've noticed that's one thing that is pretty consistent among women who are getting like their period and stuff like that. Probably have a magnesium deficiency during that time of the month. And chocolate is a great source of magnesium.
Yeah, I also think it's very underrated that's a source of copper, because copper regulates iron. So a lot of women are anemic, not getting enough copper in. That's a whole other story, but iron's in every food. Copper's in a lot less foods. And a lot of women love chocolate. Big coincidence that it has magnesium and copper? Probably not. And that's another good point, though. He was saying before, like, or I was saying, like, just because something sweet, like the, I don't know, whatever you buy at 7-Eleven, Twinkies, like, yeah, they have a lot of sugar in them. They also have a lot of absolute crap in them. Mm-hmm. Your body is probably not craving the absolute crap. It is probably craving the sugar. So differentiating between those. Just exercise, regular appetite, probably in some way.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has an effect on your appetite. Like, if I'm going to go roll for 15 rounds on Friday. We have 15-round Friday, 15 five-minute rounds. The next day, I do notice that my appetite is increased a little bit because I exhausted myself the day before and my body is kind of having like that compensatory effect.
100%.
But I would say, like, in general, it doesn't have like a massive impact. Like,
yeah,
I wouldn't say that your appetite is solely regulated off of the amount of activity that you have.
Yeah, I would also, like, exercise, activity, and then diet. Like, if you're in a calorie deficit, and then you go work out really hard, and then you go for a hike, probably going to be starving the next day if you don't mm-hmm. eat to compensate for that. But that's also your body telling you you need more food. So it's metabolism regulating itself. And then, should we avoid processed food? You want to take this one?
How processed is it? And also, like, what are the other ingredients in it? Like, how is it processed? Does it have PUFAs in it? Does it have additives in it, gums?
Yeah. I mean, processed food's kind of a bullshit term.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know if we're allowed to curse in this. Matt will block it out. Maple syrup is processed, right? Mm-hmm. Or else it would just taste like water. There are a ton of foods that are quote-unquote processed. Doesn't mean they're bad. I mean, sometimes, like, when you add salt to a beef bar of beef jerky, that preserves it so it lasts longer. Mm-hmm. Is that processing it? Is a smoothie a processed fruit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or like, you know, ice cream, that's a processed food.
That's processed food.
Yeah, I would say that food selection is, like, knowing what's in your food and, like, how it's going to affect your body is just being educated is probably the biggest thing there versus, like, you know, trying to categorize foods into, like, relative terms, mm-hmm. so to speak. Knowing exactly what the food is and what it does and what foods you want to avoid and stuff like that is going to be the biggest thing there.
Your favorite fully hydrogenated coconut oil. is definitely processed.
Yeah,
but definitely. That's going to remove all the PUFAs, probably make it more beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Last question, is the Berkey filter better than reverse osmosis?
I really don't have a preference there. I would say, like, with reverse osmosis, you obviously need to remineralize it. So that's something to think about. I think as long as you have a good quality water filter, that's the most important thing. Yeah. Like, just filtering your water is huge, whether it's in the shower or you're drinking water. Like, both of those are extremely important.
Do you – so the gravity filter, the Berkey, it was just a gravity filter versus reverse osmosis. You don't need to remineralize that?
So in the one that I have, it remineralizes itself.
Okay.
I think the Berkey might actually remineralize itself as well. It's either part of the filter or some of them will have, like, rock, like mineral rocks in them.
Yeah, I think, like, the – what's the reverse osmosis that everyone goes for? The sink one?
I can't remember.
It's been a while since I've looked into it.
Jake,
but
Jake would know. Jake would know if he was here.
I think the reverse osmosis is the top of the line, especially if you can get the remineralization. So I don't think the issue with most water is the heavy metals that are in it, fluoride, potentially copper, which is usually bound to fluoride. I don't think the copper is inherently bad. Magnesium and calcium are not usually the issues. They've actually found people with hard water tend to actually live longer. But it can mess up your pipes and your laundry machine, so it can be an issue in another aspect. But getting properly mineralized water is going to be very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, the minerals in it are going to help you actually absorb the water into the cell better. So the minerals are definitely important, but getting rid of the fluoride, the chlorine, the bromide, the lead. Pesticides, the lead.
Pesticides, like, estrogen.
There's probably almost an endless list of the amount of chemicals that are in tap water and stuff like that. So just filter your water to some degree and do what you can with what you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't shower in filtered water because I don't live in my own place, but I would love to eventually. And I mean, Jane and I don't drink a lot of water. I mean, we'll drink magnesium bicarbonate water that I make for us. Other than that, I just drink water when I feel like it. I don't like slam water. Intentionally, I drink a lot of juice, and coffee is going to hydrate you. Everything that's liquid is pretty much going to hydrate you because it all has some kind of minerals in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, a counter argument for the fruit juices and stuff like that is that the structure of the fruit, like the water coming from the fruit, is actually in a better structure to be absorbed by the cell than, you know, regular plain water.
Yeah, we also do produce water. I believe it's structured water. It's my theory. And yeah, structured water, I think there's something to it. Gerald Pollack talks about that a lot. I'm looking forward to reading his book, so maybe we'll talk about that more in the future. And the last question was by Matty Ice, asked about the optimal workout split for just general well-being. I mean, I think anywhere between 2 to 4 days a week, probably 3 is what I would do, because then you get Monday, Wednesday, Friday, day off in between, doing like a half body-ish split. So when you're taking every muscle through its full range of motion, and you don't have to kill yourself, just taking probably maybe one set close to failure at least. You're going to accumulate enough mechanical tension. As long as you eat well, get some good micronutrients in, I think you'll progress over time. When we get specific towards optimizing muscle growth and bodybuilding or even powerlifting, it gets a lot more nuanced and you gotta need a lot better programming. But doing any of our programs that we have on the UMZ Fit site, I have the Elite Hypertrophy program on there as well if you want to look into that, are going to all be great for getting some good resistance training in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Personally, I'm a big fan of the full body splits. If you're only going to be working out like 2-3 times a week, like, you know, you're not necessarily working out every single muscle group every single day, but, you know, having a leg movement, a couple upper body movements, maybe some core movements, stuff like that, just very basic and to the
lots
point.
Lots of calves.
Definitely no calves whatsoever. That's not beneficial for jiu-jitsu, so...
ankle mobility, dude.
I can get ankle mobility other ways than working my calves, but...
Yeah, so I think that's about it. Thanks, everyone, for submitting their questions. Had a lot of fun doing this.
Yep, that's all I got. Thanks for watching, and we'll talk to y'all next time.
Peace.